Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations stance point. With your host, Dan Rennie.
Welcome to Let's Talk. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land where we broadcast from today in the West End of Brisbane. Also pay respects to our elders past and present. And today, it's one of my favourites, Let's Talk Science with Deadly Sciences, Corey Tutt. Bungie, how are you?
Hey, Yama, how you going?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Your mob, your country, let's go.
Yeah, my mob is the Gomeroi mob, and I'm actually on Biripi country at the moment, not my land, but I pay my respects to all the Biripi people out there and Dungati people, and thank you so much for having me on your beautiful country, and yeah, let's Yarn Science.
As I said, one of my favourites. I learned so much from our yarns, and the feedback from the community is, you know, is so overwhelmingly positive. We love having you on as a regular, and today we're going to tackle. Well, I'll let you open with what we're talking about today.
Look, I'm going to open with I've got some chickens at the moment, and my chickens' names are Glavisper Achiculans, Anastasia Palalay, Henny Wong, and Julia Gizzard. And, they're a particular breed called Australorps, and I love my chickens. Actually, there's a phenomenon at the moment called chicken daddies, and I'm Womba, but I'm not that Womba enough to consider myself a chicken daddy yet. But I actually watch my chickens quite closely, and they have some pretty unique behaviours, and I'm going to ask you a question, Dan. Do you reckon chickens are herbivores or do you reckon they're carnivores?
I reckon they're a mixture of both because they eat worms and grubs and things like that, but they also eat the chicken feed.
Oh, that's deadly. Yeah, that's right. So they actually really like meat, which is quite sad. Like, it's quite funny because, we eat chickens for meat, and around 50 billion chickens worldwide are produced every single year, and that's for meat, that's for eggs. The interesting thing about chickens, right, is that, if you ever crack an egg, you'll see that the white egg yolk actually acts as a resin to keep the embryo, which is the middle of the egg, safe from being broken. So it's there's some really interesting videos from the lab where chickens are actually eggs, like store-bought eggs are actually incubated and basically artificially made through artificial embryos from being just cracked. So the chickens are just really incredible creatures, like in general, but they have a pecking order. And the interesting thing about chickens is that they can identify each other similar to something that budgerigars, which I will not spell for you, and bees use, which is, if I ask you again, what does a bee look like?
What does a bee look like? Well, small, orange and black striped. No, I'm thinking of a cartoon bee, aren't I?
No, you're right. You're 100% right. So if you have a look at a budgerigar's, a budgie's feathers, right, you see these black little lines, very similar to actually a bee.
Yep.
And it, for the untrained eye, you might think, oh, that's just a feather, but they actually have these little black lines that are throughout the whole body. So these black lines both appear on chickens, they appear on bees, they appear on numerous other invertebrates like mosquitoes, you name it. And if you've ever been in one of those big high-rise buildings, if you're feeling yourself a bit lucky, potentially a new business has got a rat and you've been invited into the inner sanctum of this giant building that's in the city, you'll notice that on the windows sometimes they have little black dots.
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever noticed them, but they're in the corner generally. Sometimes they're in the middle of the window. And that's because birds and insects can't actually see glass, but they can recognise these black dots and black lines. So have you ever wondered, Cuz, how bees, for example, if they swarm, they never run into each other?
I've never seen bees run into each other, bro. I can guarantee you that.
So if a bee, like a beehive of 70,000 bees, flies out and they're all angry, they're ready to go something that's threatening their hive, They actually never bump into each other. And the reason why they don't bump into each other is because of these little black lines. So those little black lines that you've described on the bee, they're kind of like a fingerprint for all animals to understand where they are. Now, if we were to take this knowledge and we were to turn it into, say, an invention, for example, like if you're thinking, like, where do you think that that would be best served? So you have this technology that can avoid collisions. Aeroplanes, exactly right. So mid-air collisions potentially could be solved by biomimicry and copying these animals and the way that they do things. The interesting thing about, you know, chickens is that they learn how to do puzzles, and they learn, they have machine learning in their brain. So chickens can actually do puzzles. They are actually highly intelligent. And part of the thing is that they actually can breed each other's feathers, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
Which is a bit different to the, you know, the person that's reading your tea leaves down the mall, but that's about it.
Budrigars, back to them. They're native, correct?
They are native. They're found in Central Australia. And the interesting thing that budrigars, they're very interesting because white fellas, they've taken these guys and they've you know, they've made them into the pet trade.
Mm.
So budrigars, their natural colour is green and yellow. But because
there's
of
blue ones, things like orange ones,
there's blue ones. Yeah, that's right. You can get purple ones. You can get them all different.
So what's going on there? Are people, you know, like we spoke about last time, are they modifying these to be pleasing to the eye? Are they catching them in the wild and breeding them? Because I've never seen a budgie in the wild, only ever in a cage.
Yeah, so that's correct. So, you know, the same way that pugs and other dogs have been bred into, you know, being aesthetically pleasing animals, this is kind of what they do with budgerigars. They do the same with the Gouldian finch and zebra finches as well, other native animals. And they breed them, what they do is that, like, so they have one baby, for example, that might be more green than yellow. And then eventually they go along through the generations until they have something that has the blue gene, which makes these birds blue, and so on and so on. So the same happens in the reptile industry where, you know, someone might have an albino blue tongue, for example, or a black blue tongue, and they just breed for that characteristic, which is called a phenotype. So the outside of an animal, for example, you might have like a, if you're in the snake world, you might hear of a yellow phased diamond python. Basically, these breeders just a line breed, inbreed until they get to the point where they have the desired phenotype, and that's how these animals are created.
Mm. And it's similar to the, well, it's exactly the same as the white tiger, isn't it? There's no white tigers in the wild. They're bred that way.
So I was of the belief that there is a species of white lion and white tiger that are found that are naturally occurring. Same with white giraffes. There's a group of white giraffes that are found naturally in Zimbabwe, but that could be that there is a genetic drift. So basically, if you have five generations of inbreeding, you will eventually come to something completely different to that species. So if you want to see something absolutely unreal, you should look up purple budgie. And it is very, very creepy. And, you know, you can see, again, if you look at a normal phase budgie, you can see that it still keeps that yellow tinge. So if you look at a wild budgie,
I'm looking at it right now. Wow, it's something.
So the same happens in the reptile industry. So basically what happens is with reptiles, for example, they now breed scaleless bearded dragons. They now breed scaleless death adders, which, you know, again, I'm more of a traditionalist. I like seeing animals in the wild of how they actually look like, not how people want them.
Why are they doing that? Why are they breeding them without
scales? Because it's a perceived sense of value, right? So if you've got something that's different to everyone else, then it's potentially more valuable because people are attracted to it. They want the things that they can't have in life, and generally these animals aren't necessarily enough in their eyes, in their natural form. So a lot of people try and create hybrid animals to, you know, again for that aesthetic factor. You know, it's the same with children, right? If you've got Pokemon cards where you've got a hydroglyphic Pokemon card, it's more valuable than a standard Pokemon card because it's playing on that that emotion that humans just want what they can't have.
And, like a woolly mammoth.
Yeah, like a woolly mammoth. And the same goes for the Tasmanian tiger. Like, yeah. You know, we aren't going to bring it back because we don't have a close enough relative in the gene pool to do that. But then, you know, people want to bring back these animals. They want to create animals that don't naturally occur because of that factor of, I'm going to create something that someone else doesn't have, therefore it's going to become valuable. And it's one of those things, like, and the thing for budgies as well, in the wild, they actually are under threat because, you know, people do take them for the pet trade and they try and get, it goes the other way as well. So some people are actually trying to reintroduce wild genetics because they've bred them too far. And then it actually happens the same, it will happen the same way where people would want something closer to the, the original bird or thing.
Yeah. Typically, I've only ever seen a budgie in a cage alone. Are they the species that hang around in flocks, or are they?
So they have large, like flocks. They're actually highly intelligent animals as well. They basically practice that thing called biomimicry. So they're good talkers as well. So people, the pet trade actually is really huge for budgies because they're good talkers. They're quite nice birds. But, you know, they will have flocks of thousands, and their fossils can be dated back 70,000 years. So they're probably, you know, haven't evolved much in that 70,000 years without, like, minus the human intervention. They've kind of stayed the same for 70,000 years at least. So these guys, again, they will have large flocks of birds, but they also, the best time to see a budgie is in the wet season in the central desert because they generally are flocking to big water sources as well.
So rather cruel then, having a highly intelligent bird isolated in a cage for many, many years. I see it with cockies too, you know. There's always big flocks of cockies around where I live, and they live a very long life from what I understand, and we're chucking
them in the cage. Every time someone tells me they're going to get a cocky as a pet, I tell them, you better leave your inheritance to that cockatoo because they generally live longer than humans.
Yeah.
So, I used to have a cockatoo at the zoo that I used to work at, and it had been there since the zoo was opened and founded, and it was over 80 years old, and it was still living and kicking. It's still alive, even to this day. And, like, you know, the thing with birds is that, you know, we don't have primates in this country, and our birds are, you know, probably just as intelligent as primates in the sense of, like, their behaviours and how they interact with us. And then as well, like, you know, I think that the thing for us is that we've got to realise that our native animals are part of us. They're part of our identity. They're part of our, you know, our clans and our knowledge systems, and they're part of our family. We look after them. We care for country. And when these people take animals such as the bog eye, the shingleback lizard out, and they send them overseas for the pet trade, you can look at it on the surface level as, like, one lizard. But that lizard breeds for life. It is a generation of lizards. And that's just taken out of there. So, you know, I guess we're gonna, like, one of the things that we've got to do is we've got to be the voice for our animals and help protect them from the pet trade and these things that are killing our wildlife.
Yeah, it just seems like a horrible existence for a pet budgie or a pet cocky. Would your advice be to not own these animals?
Yeah, occasionally, like, you know, and like people are entitled to have pets and things, but I think, you know, when something's taken out of the wild and it's deliberately made a pet, like a snake or a lizard or a bird, it's really traumatic for that animal. Like, it's a forced captivity. And, you know, like we speak about it a bit, you know, with killer whales, right? So in America, killer whales, if you've seen the movie Blackfish, unfortunately, and a couple of marine keepers are being killed while looking after these animals. And the thing is that they're so intelligent, right, that they're, you know, these animals are so smart that they just study. They study people, and they study humans, and they study the people that work with them, and they probably just don't belong in captivity, to be honest. They don't belong for our entertainment. You know, we're meant to live one. We're meant to live one little wildlife. We're being put here as humans with this brain to invent things to help protect these animals, you know?
It's always fascinating yarning with your brother, Corey. We love having you on as a regular, as I said. We'll catch you again next week on Let's Talk Science, bros.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And stay safe and stay deadly, you mob. And just quickly, shout out to all the Shepparton mob down in Victoria that are going through the floods at the moment. Mm. Our hearts are with you. And I hope that our brothers and sisters are staying safe. And I hope we can catch up soon.
Corey Tart from Deadly Science. We'll yarn with him next week on Let's Talk Science.
We believe
you're listening to Let's Talk on Triple A Murray Country.